back. I'm sending this out to a couple of friends of mine who I have not spoken to in the political realm for several years since entering into ministry and becoming a Messianic Jewish rabbi. This is Christopher Fredrickson, former host of The Paul Revere Show. And I've actually been told that somebody has actually taken the name The Paul Revere Show and has gone and done some sort of blog talk thing with it. Well, you know, great for them. It's public domain now. Oh, goodness. But, you know, a lot is going on in the political realm. And I guess that I'm wanting to kind of stretch my wings a little bit, see if I still got it, and also kind of give a little bit of a different view than what it is that you're hearing from many in the mainstream. You know, I was asked to fill in for a friend of mine in California who's on an AM radio station, and I ended up going and doing so. And when I did it, I had lost my voice that week, and I kind of sounded like Wolfman Jack, you know, as a matter of fact. You guys remember him from the 1960s and the 1970s. Late night radio guy, you know, would always play, you know, some obscure music. He also was in many different movies in the 70s and 80s and so on and so forth. You know, really weird movies, as a matter of fact. But I kind of ended up sounding like Wolfman Jack. And basically, I had a little bit of fun doing this. This is not something I'm going to be doing often. This is not going to be something I'm going to be doing constantly, unlike my weekly Torah portion teachings. But I felt that I needed to get behind the mic here today, as a matter of fact, and go and discuss this whole thing that is going on with the Republican nomination for president. You know, very early on, I was a supporter of Bobby Jindal of Louisiana. I had been hoping for years that he would end up running because he is so smart, so bright, has done amazing things in Louisiana. And then I heard that this guy, Donald Trump, was entering into the race. And I was a little bit unsure about this. But then I started to get, you know, pulled in by the fact that, you know, basically what we had here is basically a no-holds-bar candidate. And another thing that really ended up appealing to me, and this is something we're going to be getting into, is that we had a field of 17 candidates, none of which had, you know, extensive experience in the private sector, but yet wanted to dictate how the private sector works. And this is the thing about Trump, okay, is that with him, you know, we can look at the divisive language, we can get all upset about that and so on and so forth. What I'm a guy that looks at basically what the product is of a person's action. That's what I look at. I look at what are the accomplishments that this person has had in success in economy, and not just economic theory. We could talk economic theory all day long. You know, one of my favorite books of all time was Henry Hazlitt's book on economics. You know, I was a big fan of Ludwig von Mises of the Mises Institute in Austria, Austrian economics. Big fan of Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand is what caused me to become a Messianic Jewish teacher, as a matter of fact, by looking at the Bible objectively. So what I ended up seeing here was an individual who came from an upper middle class family, maybe a rich family. But yet, at the same time, not only was he able to maintain the wealth that came from his family, but also to increase it as well. A guy who has been able to make deals for his company and to expand his company and diversify his company, unlike any other. And the media would go and say, well, you know, he filed for bankruptcy 3 times. And the media obviously doesn't even understand economics on a basic platform to understand that whenever you have a business, you have something that is called an LLC. And an LLC basically has its own line of credit. The LLC has its own bank account that is not that of the personal bank account of the business owner. And so when you have hundreds of companies and three of them end up going bankrupt, that's a pretty darn good track record if you ask me, meaning that all the other ones are either breaking even or profitable. Hundreds of companies. that a person owns are either breaking even or profiting. With this, you first of all have to have an extraordinary team. Okay? Second of all, you also have to know the laws of not only the states that these things are in, the countries that they're in, but also on the local branch and so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of hoops that a person who's a real estate tycoon in New York City, if he's going to go and do something in, you know, Chappanooga, Florida or something like that, you know, if he's going to go do something down there, he not only has to obey the same federal laws as he does in New York, but he also is going to have to go and look at the diverse laws that are within Chappanooga, Florida. Is Chappanooga, Florida a real place? I don't know. Look it up. But there's a lot that, you know, goes on in terms of this that just absolutely astounds me. And the thing about it, though, is I have to wonder to myself that when you look at the media persona of what this political figure Donald Trump is, if it is just basically, I don't want to say an act, but rather somebody who's very much in tune with the language and with the concerns of the American people. And here's the thing that I have to say in terms of this, is that if you are going and teaching school to a kindergarten child, you are going to teach things much differently to them than you are going to somebody who's in college, correct? Your tone of voice is going to be different. The things you talk about are going to be very simplistic, but you're going to be able to fit into that attention span that those individuals in kindergarten have. You can't go and drawn on for lecture upon lecture with every single little eccentricity of putting something together as you would somebody who is in a college class. And so I think it is, in all honesty, that Donald Trump is very much in tune with the understanding of the American people, to where it is that he is able to fit his positions into these 30-second sound bites. He is able to draw attention to himself, and he's able to be very inventive as well. One of the things that drew me to Newt Gingrich for years upon years is that with Newt Gingrich, he was saying, let's think outside the box. Let's think outside the box. You know, we can keep on giving the same old, same old. I want to lower taxes. Well, that's great. How are you going to do it? How is it going to affect these certain parts of the economy? You know, let's talk about the widget maker. You know, those of you who had listened to me years ago know that this is kind of what I would end up doing. Whenever you would listen to my show, it'd be almost like being in like a college class on conservatism. Okay, I would say, well, you know, first of all, the widget maker has a widget maker, so you lower the taxes. What happens is the widget maker will go and, you know, be able to sell his product cheaper, hire more workers, thus creating more product. Therefore, the widget maker's widget maker, who makes the pieces for the widget maker, will then have to go and do the same, and thus it increases his business, and so on and so forth. Nobody else is explaining these things. Why? Because let's be honest, the American people are getting dumber. You could blame the public schools, you could blame the parents, you could blame, you know, there's many different things. You can blame, you know, popular culture. You know, the crap that is on TV today is just absolutely astounding. You know, I cannot watch the television today. There's a couple of shows that I like, but there's shows that make you think. Like, for instance, I love that Sherlock Holmes thing that's on CBS. What is it? Elementary. I love that show. But see, I tend to, you know, go and watch, you know, older things, you know, like Miami Vice, you know, and all that stuff, where you would have all of these little eccentricities and all that stuff. But see, the thing about those is that those don't hold a candle to things like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or these the midget wedding TV shows, or the naked dating TV shows and all that stuff. They don't hold a candle to it. I don't find it entertaining. Why? Because of the fact that, first of all, it's just garbage. It's just absolute garbage. But the thing about it, though, is our society today, basically, that's the language that they speak, is garbage. I work at a convenience store, okay? Now, working at a convenience store, I have many individuals that come in there that are, I've seen the denigration of society by working in there. I mean, there's a new trend that has started, you know, and I don't mean to get off on a rant here, to quote Dennis Miller, but here I am going to get off on a little bit of a rant. We had these individuals that come in there, and they're told to be coming to like $7.74 or something like that. So they go and they pull $7 out, or they'll pull a 20 out, rather. They'll pull a 20 out and lay it down and be like, hold on, I got 74 cents out in the car. And this is something I've never seen before until probably this year. I've been there for about 3 years, but this is like every third customer now. People are getting incredibly dumb, and I'm sitting over there going, what about all these people that are waiting behind this individual here? And finally, I go and I say, you know, hey, you go to the grocery store, are you going to say, hey, let me go out to my car and go get... You go to Walmart, are you going to go and say, hey, let me go out to my car and get... People are getting stupid. People are absolutely getting stupid. I mean, when you have English teachers that cannot speak proper English in the public school systems, there's a problem. And the fact is, I think that Donald Trump actually understands this. I think he actually does understand this. Now, the thing about this, I haven't listened to talk radio in years. But when I was filling in for a friend of mine who has a radio show in Los Angeles, when I was filling in for him, I said, okay, you know, I used to listen to Mark Levin and Andrew Wilkow all the time. I don't have the SiriusXM app on my phone anymore, but you know, I did, you know, did go and download Mark Levin's podcast. And I had to absolutely, for the first time in my life, adamantly disagree with Mark Levin and the things that he ended up saying on his radio show several days ago. Mark was discussing how it is that he was pushing for a contested convention. Now, this was before John Kasich and Ted Cruz dropped out of the race. John Kasich just dropped out today. And the thing is that Mark Levin was talking about, you know, a contested convention and how it is that the establishment needed to go and vote in for Ted Cruz, despite the fact that Donald Trump had received a majority and has received a majority of the delegates. Now, the message that Mark Levin is giving here is a message that he has spoken against for several years. The message against statism. The message against communism. The message against socialism. And when we get to the point in society where talk radio hosts on the Republican side go and say that a person's vote should not count, and the establishment should take over and pick a candidate for us, let me tell you something. You have just entered into communism. You have just entered into to communism from an individual who claims and has taught for several years about liberty and freedom. To say that the American people do not deserve a voice. And Mark ended up getting a little bit dishonest in this as well. And the talking point has been spread and spread and spread that no longer is there going to be talk about a constitutionalist conservative on the GOP side. Now, can somebody tell me how in the world Ted Cruz has been a constitutionalist conservative, and Mark Levin's claim, as well as Andrew Wilkow's claim, and the whack job, what's his name, Glenn Beck, his claim that Trump never talks about the Constitution? First of all, let's be honest here. Let's be honest. Ted Cruz was born in Canada. I mean, come on. You want to talk about Constitution? What about somebody actually running for the highest elected office of the United States, being born in Canada, and say, oh, we're just going to overlook that. Oh, he's a constitutionalist conservative. Seriously. Seriously. How in the world does that work? So I guess it's like, you know, as Andrew Wilkow used to say, socialism is only for the people, not for the socialist. You know, the thing about it, though, is that the word Constitution has started to become a talking point for many in the GOP, but yet, at the same time, they don't want to uphold the principles. When you go and you look at Ted Cruz's record, I mean, it is astounding, the stark difference between the campaign rhetoric than it is that what he's actually done. And the thing about it, though, is that, you know, people then go and say, well, you know, Donald Trump, he ended up, changes his mind on abortion and then Iraq and then, you know, socialized health care and so on and so forth. That's kind of a good thing when a person's able to change their mind based upon new information, I think. I mean, didn't Ronald Reagan do that? Didn't he say that I did not leave the Democrat Party, the Democrat Party left me? And then he changed to, you know, this conservative beacon of hope ever since he came into office in the 1980s. But today, you can't do that. You can't do that. You can't change your mind based upon new information. You know, I mean, if we have a failed formula, we just need to stay the course, you know, for the sake of the party. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, our party's broken. In 2012, we should have had the election handed to us on a silver plate. We should have been able to go and put up a monkey as the GOP hopeful and have swept that election. That is how bad the presidency of Barack Obama was. But yet, we put up another guy that, you know, sounds like everybody else, can't think for himself, let's toe the party line, and not look to new and inventive ways of going and taking care of this issue and that issue. And this is, again, why I was a big advocate for Newt Gingrich. And what ended up happening? We've heard this before. We have heard this before. What did it get us before? We have a House and a Senate that, you know, that we have the majority in that won't do anything. They won't do absolutely anything. And yet, at the same time, we want to go, well, business as usual. Let's just keep it as business as usual. I'm sorry, but the American people have, first of all, connected with a candidate that has said, you know, business as usual is not working, first of all. That's a big shock to quite a few of those who just toe the party line. The fact is that when we have an individual who has started a multi-billion dollar company, has diversified it to the extent in which Donald Trump has, don't you think that he may have a little bit of know-how in how to fix this economy? As opposed to somebody who sits there and reads newspaper articles, reads books all day long, goes and votes on what it is that you need to be doing, but has never basically had their butt on the line, who has never been a part of the own system that they themselves are trying to initiate. I find it to be absolutely abhorrent that many of these talk radio elite nowadays are saying that, you need a viable third party candidate. Wait a minute. Haven't we learned from history, and haven't you guys even taught that a third party candidate is never the answer? Considering that we've had many elections handed to Democrats because of a third party candidate? I mean, do these individuals want Hillary Clinton as president? Is that what they want? That's obviously what it sounds like to me. We'll be right back here in just a couple of minutes.
Angry words and honking cars, satellites and falling stars, distant dark blue radios that whisper down my boulevards. Ghosts and chains rattle in the attic, broken headphones filled with static. Lonely room, you've got nowhere to run. 3, 2, 1 for all and all for one. Times will be bad, times will be good. Things I wish I hadn't done, and some I wish I would. Cutting through the American noise, you've got a voice and a song to sing.
And a song to sing.
Drink deep in the morning. Drink deep in the morning.
cell phone rings. Hurricane force of silent screams. Don't know what to believe. Bend the rule just to break it. You're so tired cause you gotta fake it. But you just wanna be someone.
All right, and we're back. Another thing that has basically been talked a great deal about here in the last 24 hours, considering that Trump is the only person left on the field, is who is going to be his VP running mate. There's a lot of names that have been thrown out there. And the thing about it is I think some of them could be some really good choices, but I don't think at the same time they would be choices that would necessarily be helpful. And I'll tell you why that is. Okay, one of the names that has come up is Rick Scott, great governor of Florida. I remember when he got elected. Great governor in Florida. The issue with Rick Scott, however, is that, first of all, he's a governor. Okay? Basically, he has never worked in the legislative branch of government. He's worked in the executive branch of government. So we got a person that's an executive of a business, which is an amazing portfolio and an amazing driving force to get people to the polls, because this is a guy that gets it as the lead guy on the ticket. And then you have somebody else in another executive position. I have said that basically what Donald Trump needs to do is to energize the base by getting somebody who is the exact complete opposite from him, somebody who's not an executive. The name Nikki Haley has come up, the governor of South Carolina. And the thing about that is that there would actually be a little bit better of a choice there. I'm not saying that she's any better of a governor than Rick Scott, but what I am saying is that, first of all, Trump is going to have to jump that hurdle in terms of getting the women vote, okay? There's some things that have definitely been setbacks for him with the woman vote. That would be helpful. I would like to see Donald Trump choose somebody from the Senate or somebody from the House of Representatives. Possibly a woman. There are other names that have come up as well. One that I would personally be excited about would be Ben Carson. Ben Carson, you know, he's got that nice tone in his voice and just a sweet individual all around. But at the same time, he's not a person that has ever been a part of the establishment. Whether or not he can energize the base, I don't think he can to the level in which it needs to be. And plus, again, he has never worked in government. So basically, you know, basically Donald Trump would be stabbing himself in the foot. Another name that has come up is Chris Christie. Chris Christie, you know, made some mistakes in New Jersey, but has also done some really good things in New Jersey. I remember when he first got elected, we dubbed him the Fat Man, is what we referred to Chris Christie as. And I like Chris Christie. But also at the same time, I also realized at the same time that his language at times, he's been known to be a very divisive individual. Donald's going to need somebody who is not as divisive as him. Somebody who is, you know, basically has the same demeanor as somebody like a Ben Carson. But he's going to need somebody who's in the legislative branch of government. I don't think that he needs to do anything drastic, first of all. You know, this, you know, people are worried about, you know, some sort of surprise out in left field pick. I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. This is a guy that's been one step or two steps ahead of everybody. Now, this whole thing with Cruz, however, even though he's out of the race, this whole thing with him choosing Carly Fiorina was just utterly destructive. Because first of all, you know, I know what he was thinking is, first of all, okay, we have somebody from the private sector here, or I'm sorry, and somebody in the private sector who's basically kicking my butt in delegates here, that was a businessman. So what am I going to do? I'm going to get a businesswoman in here. Well, Ted, why in the world were you going to choose somebody who ran one of the biggest computer companies in the world in the ground? That, you know, that's like so counterintuitive to what it is that you were trying to accomplish. It makes absolutely zero sense to pick Carly Fiorina, who I've dubbed a Skeletor, to be as your running mate. I mean, that's just utterly ridiculous. You want somebody with a record of succeeding, not a record of failure. She failed for her position in Nevada. She failed as the CEO of Hewlett Packard. I mean this is what her resume is. Nothing but failure. But very early on, people said that in the two debates that happened, because they had so many candidates, they had to do one debate at 5 o'clock and one at 8 or 9 o'clock. The lower tier candidates, everybody was saying, Carly Fiorina ended up winning that. But the thing about it, though, is at the same time, I think she was the only one who got to talk out of all of them. And secondly, you know, in all honesty, I didn't hear anything that I was really that impressed with, in all honesty. I think Bobby Jindal would have been great in that bottom tier, and he did do well. But the thing about it, though, is that, you know, you think that he should change his name to Poindexter in the way that he talks, in the way that he looks, and all that stuff. That's not saying anything against about the way he looks or anything. But at the same time, it's like Bobby Jindal will put you to sleep. You know, just like when I supported Fred Thompson, I said, you know, Fred's like Eeyore with narcolepsy, unfortunately. You know, and that's exactly how it is that he was. And I think it was a good move for John Kasich to go and drop out today, as a matter of fact, because, you know, he kind of reminded me, you know, okay, so far we got Skeletor, we got Eeyore, and he kind of reminded me of Jimmy Stewart, as a matter of fact, you know. You know, I think he thought that he was, you know, being Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, you know, and all that stuff, because he does sound a lot like Jimmy Stewart. He does. But yeah, you know, in all honesty, these are the real things that we have to look at here. And I think it's utterly deplorable that we have individuals within the Republican Party trying to push third-party candidacy, and basically instead saying, you know what, put me on your team so that I can help you with these things that basically cause some fraction of the people, myself included, not to hate you. If it was really about the country, this is what individuals like Mark Levin, individuals like that of Ted Cruz, individuals like that of Andrew Wilkow, and others would be doing. Newt Gingrich, you know, absolutely brilliant individual. Absolutely brilliant individual. Was just kind of sitting back on Fox, you know, a couple of weeks ago. He's like, you know what? You just have to jump on board with this. You know, there's no other option here. There's really not. You know, and that's something that is so out of the norm for Newt Gingrich to say. And personally, I think Newt Gingrich would be the perfect running mate for Donald Trump, in all honesty. Don't know if that'll end up happening, but we will see. But if it's good to get back behind this microphone again for the first time, and oh my gosh, 3, 4, maybe 5 years, I don't know. I hope that this kind of helped to bring a little bit of unification to the Republican Party. I might end up doing a couple of more of these. Who knows? But, well, I'm just going to say shalom over Kov. Peace and a blessing. Shalom.